Thank you, Miriam. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Jazz Call on the 22nd of February. And on the line, we have Rafik Damak, Sintra Sukanan, Elaine Free, Eric Brenner-Williams, and we have apologies from Tony Harris, Carlton Samuel, Alex Gukuru, Avery Doria, and there is someone else, and Tijani Benjamin, and Cheryl Langdon Orr. And is Carla on the line yet? Carla Valente? Okay, Raf.
Carla's just joined.
Ah, thank you very much. Okay, Tijani, over to you. Thank you.
It's happy. Okay, thank you, Elaine. Okay, hello. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining today's call. So we have a few people present in the call, but I have quite important items to cover. I think first, it's about in relation to the GAG and board meeting next week. We discussed that maybe we should send like a letter that to express the view of the working group. We don't have volunteers yet, but I really encourage that we work to draft something as soon as possible. Then we have Sebastian that can distribute our document during the CAC and the board meeting, because a topic about related to developing countries in UGTLD program is one of the items of that meeting agenda. So, any volunteers, any comments, any ideas that can foster this effort? Please, I'm not in the Adobe Connect, so please, if you want to get the queue, just say so. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, Eric, thanks. So, any comments? Okay. So, we have Andrew now. Okay, hearing none, I think that I will try to find some people or to draft by myself and just to send to the working group for review and comments. Okay. Elaine, please go ahead.
So, Rafik, do you have some idea of what you want to write in that letter? Could we hear what your ideas are?
Because we have two points. There is already a GAC working group that we, Sintra, mentioned it last week. And even she tried to contact Tracy, who is involved in that GAC working group. My understanding is trying to maybe summarize what we recommended before and maybe what some more additional stuff. I'm not sure what we can add, but just maybe to summarize or to stress some points that we think are important to highlight. To draft the kind of executive summary, something that can be easy to read, and to in that context, I think that they already have many material to read. But if we can make like a really short letter that to highlight what we want to advocate, it to be agreed. So, if what do you think? What kind of points that we should highlight or to present? Is it clear, Elena? Did I answer to? Oh, please, Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, Rafiq, sorry. I guess I'm not quite clear. Can you help us? And I'm sorry, I have a couple minutes late. I had a challenge with the metro. I'm kind of cast on my foot right now. I'm not entirely sure. The audience can you help us understand what it is we're hoping to accomplish through this?
Okay, I think the idea, it's because it's already that issue of to include developing, how to say, developing countries in the initiative, the program, it's one of the topic in the agenda of the GAG and board meeting. So it's really a good opportunity for us to advocate or to how to stress our recommendation, because you know the GAC many times expressed in its communique and during a communique that issued after ICANN meetings, they many times they stressed the need to help applicants from developing countries. So it's a good opportunity for us. Because this meeting will be before the San Francisco meeting, and also maybe it will help us to advocate some recommendation that I'm not sure they already receive they were received by the ICANN board. So that's my that one of things that I can suggest.
Okay, that makes sense. One more quick question for you: is this something that they have requested of us, informally or formally? And if I'm just trying to get a context. That's all.
In fact, it was a suggestion from Sebastian, who will be there in that meeting, so he can. He can distribute the document for us on behalf of us during the meeting. So it's quite, I think, it's a good opportunity somehow that we can use to, I think that we need to maybe to pass some message to the GAG and the board in that time. Ina, please go ahead.
Thanks, Rafiq. I don't know if you're aware, but we did write an executive summary for our milestone report. So if we could just go off of that, I would strongly suggest that we don't add any new ideas or new material because we won't have time to reach consensus on any new concepts.
So it's the last one of the milestone report to me. Okay, I think that makes sense. And to try to find if we have that document in the wiki, and then we can use it. And then if maybe, just in case, just to share in the mailing list to see if there we think that we can add something or we want to add some points, because what even we I think we did some progress at least in some points. So maybe if we want to add, or just in case, so because we have, as you said, we don't have so much time, just less than 1 week to do that. Okay, so if there is no more comment, we can move to the next item. Okay, hearing none. Thanks, Andrew. So, okay. For the next item, last time we discussed about the to have a working group meeting for San Francisco. And I think the San Francisco meeting schedule was published. So, Carla, can you give more update on that? And so we can, I think, now we can select some the time and date, and then to check in the mailing list with the whole members of the working group. Carla?
I don't have really, Rafiq, anything to add to this piece. Any time and date you want, I will just book a room.
Yeah, I saw that the schedule is now online. No, just to check, because, you know, for Genesu site, I think there is no conflict. I don't know if there will be some session of some joint working group or something, but for Genesu, but for the ALAC, I'm not sure. That's why.
Yeah, for the agenda, yeah, so it's really up to the working group to tell me the time, because these rooms that we are booking are rooms that are not being in use, so any time you want is fine.
So what do you think if we set up, as usual, a doodle pool just to check, because we can either have Wednesday or Thursday, and just to about the same time, and then just to check, and we have more clear idea among all the working groups members who are going to attend the San Francisco meeting. So it will be fixed the issue quickly.
Okay,
so please, let's do that, and then we can move. So we are sure that to have a working group face-to-face meeting in San Francisco. So what else? I don't think that we have anything, any other point related to this item for San Francisco meeting. Maybe how to... about our message or some, as I think, some lobbying or something like that. I'm not sure if we can do that. Any comments? Wow, it's quite cold today. Okay, I think now we can move to the work team reports. Unfortunately, we don't have Tijani, Avery, and Tony, but we have Sintra. Sintra, you are still here in the call?
Yes, I can give a summary of where we are right
now. Yeah,
yeah. In terms of routine AV, Tijani, Carlton, and myself drafted the eligibility criteria, and we put down somewhat of a test with regard to those items coming out of the AE milestone report. I think the document is ready for review by the rest of the Jazz working group. So it will be in the shared Google document. Right now, it's just a matter of us refining the test of each criteria. And I don't know if we want to elaborate on further criteria at this stage, but that's where we are at.
Reading your email, my understanding is that the like is how to have a specific test for each criteria, like how to assess.
Rafiq, can you speak into the mic when you speak into it? It's really really easy to hear you, and a little harder when you're speaking away.
Okay, sorry.
No, thank you. Just want to hear what you say.
Okay, just my understanding, reading Sintra made that one thing to elaborate is how to have a specific test for each criteria. So, if I understand, the work team defines the criteria, but we need how to assess that the applicant is matching that criteria, no?
Correct. And perhaps at this stage as well, we can ask for external consultants, so to speak, to just review what we have done and to see if they would prefer to add anything or to clarify anything. I don't know if there's, you know, anybody that we know in the World Bank, or I don't know who exactly we want to bring on as an expert at this stage.
You mean that we need some expertise for that for this point?
Noel, if it is that we can't decide on a test, then I think it's appropriate for us to ask.
Okay. Any comments?
Well, I submitted written comment.
Okay, we have Andrew and Eric.
Let Eric go first, please.
Eric, please go ahead.
I already submitted written comments. They were to the list.
Oh, yeah. Yes, but maybe just to summarize them, or just for to share with the people here in the call. I'm not sure that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Eric, please go ahead.
I don't have my previous written comments in front of me.
Okay.
If they haven't been read, then they haven't been read.
Let's try to. Okay. Yes, I try to change them. In the meantime, please, Andrew, go ahead.
Well, actually, I was going to toss this back to Cintra and ask her if there are there specific issues that you and Tajani are working on that are really giving you difficulty. I mean, I'm a little behind the loop because I've been working on other stuff, but. He and I spoke last week, and he was mentioning that this is a very difficult thing. I guess the question in my mind are twofold: is one in terms of the criteria, and then the other one is in terms of the mechanism for checking that criteria. And I wondered where it was you were having the trouble, so that maybe we could focus in on that for a few minutes.
Okay. Well, the criteria were already defined by and large in the milestone report, right? It was just for us to refine those criteria. The difficult part is really defining the test. How difficult a bar do we want to create for new applicants? That sort of thing, because our primary criteria will be need, financial need. Right? With regard to Eric's comments, Eric, I don't know when exactly did you send your comments. Because we had recently updated the Google Doc. So I don't know if Tijani may have incorporated your comments.
I think Eric sent them in Friday after the call, no?
On the 18th.
Okay. Well, I'll have to speak to Tijani because I know he did make some revisions based on the outcome of the call. But if not, we'll look at it again, and then I know the aim is to, what I'll do is I'll just resend an email to everybody so they can look at it at that point.
Well, I now have it in front of me, so I guess
okay,
I can
go for it.
I can bore you all and talk about it. So the first point I raise is that the cost and the complexity of asking for money should not be so great that it deters applicants from actually asking. That is, we want somehow there to be, I'll get back. You'll see where this comes up later. The second point is that because ICANN is, the applicant has to be a corporate entity in order to contract with ICANN. This means that in all likelihood, many of the applicants will be corporations which are formed within a year of the date of application. And therefore, a three-year prior horizon for financial reporting will require looking past the applicant to the antecedents of the applicant. And this will be true both for good applications, you know, deserving applications for which no gaming is present, and et cetera, and also for applicants which could be characterized otherwise. It's likely that many applicants will, in fact, be corporations which are less than a year old and are special purpose vehicles for just particular investment activity. So the three-year backwards requirement creates a cost and complexity problem for the applicant, and it also creates a problem for whoever the evaluator is, let us say it's us at this moment, in trying to pierce the corporate veil and look into the past and into several other corporations, not just the applicant corporation. And feel free to comment at any point if either this makes sense or does not make sense.
No, Eric, we did incorporate those comments.
Okay. The
and the three-year financial report that was actually discussed on the Friday's call, and in my opinion, it is appropriate simply because you need to have a stable organization that has been around and can prove that, you know, it is handling its finances well and that sort of thing.
Well, it's nice to have an opinion. The fact is that you're asking for something that goes, you're basically creating a requirement that applicants that are needy existed two or more years in the past from the present moment, assuming that the application date occurs within less than a year from now. So you're creating through this requirement, and your belief is this is a legitimate requirement for you to impose on the applicant, and I'm just pointing this out so that you understand what you're actually requiring. You're requiring that the applicant already exists in its corporate form in 2008 in order to be eligible to apply for assistance in 2011 or 2012. Is that your desired goal?
Eric, can I jump in here?
Sure.
Oh, sorry, Sandra.
Andrew, please go ahead.
Eric, I completely get where you're coming from, and I think that this is actually a more significant challenge or question than maybe we realized at the outset for a couple of reasons. First of all is because this process has started up. I mean, this process has been moving forward in greatest earnestness in the last 2 years, and there may be a number of people who have become interested in this, especially from the markets that we're trying to reach more recently as opposed to longer ago. It's just the nature of things. That's number one. Number two is I can see very many instances where a special purpose vehicle, a special legal form, will have been set up specifically to do this. For example, in a community or an NGO or even a company that wants to do this specifically, it makes sense for them legally to set up a separate company to do this, because this is a separate activity and for a whole host of reasons. And so we don't want that to necessarily disqualify them. The other thing is that I can see in the case of a community, there may be two or three different groups that might be interested, and a nice compromise solution might be that they all come together to offer a similar script. Or a similar, to apply for the new GTLD. In that case, they wouldn't necessarily have had a pre-existing identity, even though the subcomponents of that group might actually be fairly well established. So in all of those cases, I think that there may be, this may actually be a little bit more complicated, and I agree with Eric. We don't want the fact that, we don't want to kick them out for what we would consider to be good behaviors, which might be a compromised behavior or, you know, getting set up in a smart way legally. Does that make sense, everybody?
Well, it does to me, of course, but I'm interested in Cintra's answer because she said that she thought this was a good requirement.
What I was saying is that it's desired, but it's not required. So certainly you would desire an applicant to have a certain level of, be established for a certain amount of time, but it's not a requirement to automatically get rid of an applicant. So we will have to, you know, based on some other metrics, we will have to be able to really determine, you know, the legitimacy of applicants who are, you know, established under 3 years, 6 months, 2 months, that sort of thing. So it is a gray area.
I just want to point out, Cintra, that the purpose of ICANN's outreach program is presumably, I mean, Carla can correct me if I'm wrong, but the purpose of doing outreach after the board approves of the new GTLD program, if they ever do, and when they do, if they do, is to cause parties to apply. So corporations will be formed the day that ICANN says we're going to go ahead for the purpose of submitting an application some 3 months subsequent, assuming those the timeline. So if we, the definition of, I just wanted to point out that we should expect applicants to form within the 3 month period of the application date itself. Not, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Eric.
Okay. Cintra? Okay, we have Andrew. Cintra, you want to comment?
No, I agree with him. It is something we have to look at.
Okay, so Andrew, please go ahead.
Yes, Rafiq, if I could. I think Eric is very much right to have flagged this, but I think this may be an easy fix, which is that what we need to do is to say the goal, which is to have entities involved in this that have some background and have some sustainability as entities, I think makes good sense, right? And so all we need to do is to include in language that says that the entity, if it is a new entity, that we have to have some sort of ability to do look back on, the predecessor entities have to have some track record, and we just have to measure that. The question is when there are multiple predecessor entities and, you know, for example, one of them might fit our criteria and others, one of them might not, or where you have predecessor entities, some of which may be financially solvent and solid and others of which may be not so solvent and solid. And I think that may be a challenge. I can see, for example, in the case of community groups where you have a broad coalition of people coming together to do this in, you know, Dachhausa or whatever, and some of the groups may be big and relatively robust, and others of the groups may be very, very small and only a few people, and they decide to bring them all together. So I think it's just a question of writing it all down, trying to put that together as a policy. That's it.
Oh, sorry. Eric was going to comment.
Well, I guess I could continue on my laundry list, but I don't want to spend the whole call just doing my laundry list.
Okay.
If there are other things that are relevant, I would say go through it now.
Well, it occurred to me that looking backwards is one choice that we have. We can also look forwards. That is, what is the... Suppose we have an applicant which the backward look is satisfied that the applicant is qualified, but the applicant has actually hidden some assets which the applicant then uses for marketing and achieves a return on investment goal that surprises us or that is unexpected because we had not, we being, of course, the imaginary us in the role of evaluators of the applicant's need, whoever that actually turns out to be. But in the case of a hidden hoard, we really don't have any recourse. If we're fooled in the backwards-looking portion of the evaluation, we're fooled permanently. That's an issue of bad conduct or gaming to address. But there's a similar issue that arises with unexpected success. Suppose there's an applicant that needs qualified and so forth, and they strike it rich, truly rich. We want to recover revenues for the sustainability of this program. Do we have an interest, then, therefore, in looking at the quarterly returns, the profitability of registries which are qualified and receive assistance during the first several years of their operations in order to either discover bad acts which occur after the contract period is entered or to discover hidden, surprising success and the opportunity to refund the assistance back to for the purposes of sustainability of the assistance program. So that was, I think, the last thing that I wrote in my notes, sort of the conclusion of a critique of just looking backwards, that is, looking some three or so years into the past. Thank you.
Andrew, please go ahead.
Okay. As I recall from our earliest work, we talked about the idea that a registry that makes a fair amount of money would repay any assistance that it would be given, that was one of our presuppositions and one of our goals, and I think if that makes sense. So to some extent, I think the issue becomes a smaller one. The question is only when do we look back and see if they're making the resource. Monitoring someone quarterly seems like a lot of work for us, and maybe. Something that a registry might or might not accept, but I think we had originally had some sort of an idea that the support program period might be a time certain of say 3 years or something like that. Certainly, it would make sense that at the end of 3 years, if we look back and we say that not only is the entity self-supporting, but that it is actually taking off. That at that point in time, you could put into the agreement that they would have the following responsibilities. I don't know whether it makes sense to look farther into the future than that. If it's earlier than 3 years, I don't know if we have enough data to make the call. But I think if we write it into the contract that says, as part of the support contract, you agree to this kind of look back at the 3 year mark and. Maybe at the 4-year mark and maybe at the 5-year mark, that would strike me as making a fair amount of sense.
Sintra, please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to highlight that I did copy the link to the Google Doc into the chat area as well. These two issues that you're dealing with being the first being the non-disclosure is dealt with in step 3 and repayment and partial payment of and recycling of funds is dealt with in step 4. So I don't know if you can, I've copied the text person is relevanted. But, you know, if you could both, or, you know, the group as a whole could just evaluate that and see if we can refine it. Maybe maybe there are items that need to be taken out or put in, you know, as well. But it is covered at a basic level in our text.
Thank you, Cynthra. I was unaware of the editorial change.
I'm sorry, Eric, did you see something? I didn't
Yes, I was thanking you. I was unaware that the editorial change had been made in the AB text.
Yes, I am. We had included your bit on gaming and that sort of thing. So it's just a matter of...
Well, I'm sorry I've wasted everyone's time then. Thank you.
No, it's not wasted. I think Tijani did put it in, and we did discuss the three-year thing on Friday. So, but, I mean, we're discussing it. These are these items that really need... It's not black or white. It's something that we really need to try to understand every possible situation and try to cater.
Andrew?
Yes. This looks great, Tintra. Gonna have to take a look a little bit more. It does beg the question: if this is some of this is going to require an actor to do the reviewing and do the evaluating, and it's not just going to be one-time evaluating, but it's going to need to be ongoing. Has your part of the group thought at all about what would be the appropriate entity to do that, and the shape and the form of that entity, and things like that? Because this does kind of imply that we stand up some sort of a small regulatory team. Somebody's going to need to do the means testing. Someone's going to need to, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I don't think we've defined anything. We haven't defined anybody specifically. There are areas of that we have proposed, like being, especially in the means test and that kind of thing, where we said, you know, we've just chosen a value and it really needs to be looked at more carefully. We are actually, I mean, I think there was a suggestion by Olivier previously that perhaps we should set up a non-profit arm of ICANN to do this evaluation. I don't know if that's still something that's, you know, being looked at or not. But certainly that is one area that we really need to define who should really be in charge of assessing this and ensuring their independence.
Andrew, you want to comment?
Oh no, I'm sorry. I that was my question. One of the concerns that I have is that we're going to have to find, in addition to finding money to actually cover program, we're going to have to find money to cover this little apex group, right? This evaluation group and support group. And I don't think that it will be difficult to find people who have relatively good experience in the space. I think that the challenge is going to be able to find it, but it may be challenging to find the money to cover the group. And I'm wondering, is this, in everybody's conception, is this a group that exists with a connection, a specific connection to ICANN, or is this a group that is independent of ICANN? And, you know, for example, if the funds come from outside of ICANN, does this group exist outside of ICANN as well? What's everybody's preference?
Someone want to answer?
I think there are too few people on this call to really respond to that. I think it's something that perhaps we'll have to decide on the mailing list and flesh out there, or perhaps on another call when there are more people, more members.
Okay. If anyone seems to have more comments, I think Sintra, maybe it's possible to update the document
with all the comments that we have in this call. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, so just maybe I think we have quite interesting discussion. So maybe the work team members need to update the document with the comment that we heard now, and then to share that again with in the mailing list. So if there is no more comments, we can move to the next work team. Okay, hearing none. Ilan is still here in the call. Ilan, no. Okay. I think he's not anymore on the call. Okay.
Not sure how to handle. So I think we don't have leaders of others' work teams.
The option, if maybe you want to continue the discussion about work team A and B, but otherwise we can adjourn this call for today. So.
I mean, we're right now, I've been putting together the kind of where we are for our group, but the truth is that we have so few people on the call right now, maybe it would be better to post things up online and move on from there.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking that it's possible that Sintra can update the document that we share again on the mailing list. I'm not sure that people will listen to the MP3, so it's better to share the document and then to have other comments and to see if people can review the document and then to discuss about it in the next call.
Mm-hmm. That sounds fine. I've got some stuff that I'm going to share with Eric, and then we could post once I speak with Eric and Tijani from our group. So that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah, it's... I say if it's the work to be done in the work team and A and B. So, Andrew, do you have any updates in your work team? So,
as I was saying, I'm going to let me be brief. What I've tried to do is to basically go back through the different things where we are, and what the conversations we've had with people outside of our working group have told us. And to try then to get the group's advice on how we can fit this in. In terms of where we are, it seems very clear that IDNs should be a part of our pitch to potential funders, to the international donors and foundations. This seems to fit their target markets a lot. They're very much focused on issues of digital divide and of fairness, and this addresses a lot of their concerns about, if you will, northern domination of the web. On the community side, this seems to be pretty important to the way that they actually see themselves and express themselves, especially communities outside of North America. In Asia, and as Eric has mentioned, in North America and in other places, that including communities that express themselves in multiple scripts. And in terms of companies that are trying to reach out to regional companies, especially who are trying to reach out to people in their own space, in their own language. One of the things that we have found is just how much more this idea of a multi-script identity is a part of our, it should be a part of our thinking. A number of people have mentioned it. There are a number of cases. There are, the cases that Eric mentioned about the North American groups. There are different cases around Africa and Latin America where different multi-scripts are used. Certainly, in India is the perfect example where you might wish to have a number of different scripts. One of the things that has come up in conversations I've had since then has been about the increasing mobility and the rise of this sense of the connected diaspora, and the idea that you have people who are from a particular community who exist in, if you will, in one language in one country and another language in another country, or another one script in one country and another script in another country. And I think that that's increasingly going to be the case as people become more mobile and more connected in their mobility. And also the rise of a lot of communities, NGOs, companies in the South who are wanting to reach multiple IDN communities. So it's a lot of our a lot of the work historically has been focused on the idea that it would be northern groups trying to reach out to underserved southern communities. And in fact, there's an awful lot of push from the South now. We've identified three different kinds of cases. And Eric, I'd like to love it if you'd jump in real quickly to make sure that I get this right. One in which there are IDNs alone. A second one, groups with identities in multiple scripts, and Cree, Cherokee, but many others. And then groups that wish to work across platforms, so that use IDNs. So, for example, NGOs that wish to go regional, professional associations. Eric mentioned the possibility of doing like a dot medicine or something like that, and that makes good sense. I think that for IDNs especially, the issue of pricing will be an issue, and it will be an issue because when you're talking about an underserved community that needs one script to be real, to really truly represent itself as it sees itself, that may be a challenge. But certainly if it's a community that really truly exists in two scripts, that makes it even more of a challenge. And so something about pricing needs to be done. We've talked a little bit about bundling. That is an option for getting at the pricing issue. If there are other options, then I'm very interested in knowing what there is. The key thing from our perspective is that we recognize that there is a limited amount of funds going to be available. And so to the extent that we're not asking for a second pull, if you will, on the finance of whatever foundation gets set up, we think that's probably a benefit. And then the last piece that I had is that there were some agreements that we had come to from our call a couple times ago that there is no preference for IDNs in our application process on the one hand. On the other hand, that it was important not to ignore IDNs in the process, and that we all agreed that providing some level of linguistic diversity through this process, at the very minimum, to not have IDNs be an afterthought or to have it be somehow or another more difficult to get into the IDN space, that was a value that we wanted to pursue. So that's kind of where that's kind of from the notes that I have where we are. And Eric, if you'd please jump in and fill in anything that I got wrong or that should have been added to that.
No, you've done quite well. I'm tempted to editorialize. We're struggling with the lack of internationalization of ICANN itself. We're trying to localize applications without actually having the means to do so. So we're stuck with this notion of an application is a string, not an application is the resources necessary to get a job done, which may include maybe as simple as one string, or it might be several strings. But I don't see that Peter and Rod are going to be any more flexible on this than Peter and Paul were on this for over the past 3 years.
Well, I mean, I certainly agree with you. I think, as with a lot of other parts of this, we might as well ask for what we think makes sense. Certainly, I think it's been made abundantly clear to us through our conversations and through conversations with people outside of our working group that there are a tremendous number of groups that would be interested in applying, who are, you know, kind of a multi-script identity, and that's an important part of who they are, whether it's reaching their community members or reaching the association or client members that they're trying to reach out to, that is really on a deep level who they are. And so if there's some way that we can make that easier, I certainly think that that's going to be important. In point of fact, because of the way that the web has developed, an awful lot of people who in their regular life have an IDN identity have at least partly Latin script identity on the web. And so I think that that's something that we have to come to grips with, because we're effectively, if we don't make a move in the direction of IDNs, we're effectively asking them all to, you know, to have this dual identity, and it's asking a lot.
Okay, any further comments? Andrew, can you please summarize all these points and document something that can be helpful to people to review and to comment?
I would be happy to. I actually have it written down, and so I will send it out to the group. If there are any comments, I'll add them in, and then if not, I'll send them out this afternoon or tomorrow. Sure, no problem.
Just document, and then we can share in the wiki. So the idea is to have the track all of these points, because I think we have really interesting discussion in our calls, but we need also to write down all these points that after we can draft our report.
Sure. I just wanted to get everybody's thoughts before I put it up on the wiki. That's all.
Oh yeah. Thanks. Okay, any further comments? Okay, guys, thank you for attending this call. We have really few attendees, but we could have really a great discussion and to progress on different points. So what I can advise is that for the different work team that we discussed, their reports, that to update their documents and to share with the working group members, and also to put them in the wiki, so we can then to track the progress done there. So thank you again, and we adjourn this call for today. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.